Hey, this is Engineer Eric from the Jimmy Doan Show. As you know, Jimmy's been on a trip with Mrs. Jimmy and Grandma in California for the past 2 weeks. We did try to do a show last week, but the phones were struck by lightning and had to be completely rewired in the studio. Hence, no show. But not to worry. This week we have a very special treat for you. On his way back from California, Jimmy dropped by in a surprise visit to our friends the Hanger Dogs out in Payton, Colorado for a Triple Snaps top-notch podcast that I'm sure you will enjoy. So get ready as we join Gene, Stitch, and Jimmy in this Collector's Edition show.
Out here on a regular basis.
Well, that's, yeah, that's you're welcome.
Yeah, that's no problem. I just
you're in.
Well, you know, and the good news is Pinky's home. Pinky came in to work today, and he gave me a very, very top-notch hat, which I just think it's cool as all
something,
get out.
Something so. From the Avant-Garde bar?
No, actually, something even better. But yeah, he finished off with a couple of absents at Avant-Garde before he came home, just so that you know he could remember what it feels like to throw rocks at your grandma. You know, but yeah, I had a good time. It's good to have him back, and he'll be here. He'll be here Thursday.
Did you tell him we had Jimmy tonight?
Yes, I did. I did. But I mean, you know, he's been gone for 120 days.
I know.
But he goes, you know, honey, I'm home, but I gotta go hang out at a hangar and drink beer. I'd rather go do that than hang out with you, sweetheart.
I gotta sweetheart. Go. Yeah. Hang out with the boys.
Yeah. So yeah. Pinky's not stupid. You know, he may be a bold man, but sometimes, you know, that's just plain sheer stupidity. So.
You know, I got mostly heavy stuff. Have you got very many light things?
No, not many. I'm kind of hoping Jimmy carries the day.
Oh, right. Thanks a lot.
You just sprinkle the light stuff in as we go. All right, let's go. Kick her off.
Okay.
Scene one, Apple, take one.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hanger Dogs podcast. Thank you, our live studio audience. Today is June
19th. And our live studio chicken.
Live studio chicken. Today is June 19th. This is our 21st podcast.
The big 2-1. We're legal to drink.
Legal to
Hot
drink.
Damn.
Very, very special podcast.
We have a special
guest in the studio.
We do indeed.
We have Stitch and Gene, but we have Jimmy Doan from
Jimmy
the Jimmy Doan Show.
The real Jimmy Doan. He's here. Wait a minute. Hang on here. I got to get a special. There we go.
Our live studio audio.
Yeah.
And again.
All the way from Gainesville, Florida, where the elite like to meet for gator tail treats.
Jimmy traveling out here just to be in the Hanger Dog studio.
Well, I don't know about that.
No, it's true.
Okay.
This is my Father's Day gift.
Wow.
Yeah.
Boy,
we're going to talk about this.
You need to ask for something better than that.
No. This is the slice of heaven in the middle of the trip through Hades.
Okay. Yeah, it'll work for me.
And we have in the studio with us Mrs. Jimmy. She's here enjoying a glass of our wine here.
Yeah. I tried to get her on the headset Jimmy just Dogs to listen in, but she refuses. I think it'll mess her hair up or something. I'm not sure. Not that we care.
Yeah, no wind here, one good thing.
Okay, what do you got? You want to kick off?
I do.
Do you got something going?
Oh, man.
Let's.
Man, you guys are hitting me early.
This is actually going to be a collector's edition of our podcast.
That it will, I'm thinking. Well, you know what? I'll kick it off. Let me ad-lib. It's more fun when I do that. I get all riled up and everything. But our good friend, the ever-faithful, the ever-present, the ever-genuine, the ever-comical Pinky, is actually back in the good old United States.
Back on U.S. soil.
A lot of people want to know about that. And top-notch to our good friend Pinky, who is back. And he'll be here Thursday for the podcast that we'll be doing then.
With K-Man.
Yep. K-Man is flying in from Iowa, which for the Rocky Mountain Regional EAA fly-in, which is an annual event. He always comes out and stays with me. So this year he comes out and gets to do a podcast just to pay for, you know, room and board, I'm reckoning. So,
and we'll send him home with some Hanger Dogs cups for sure.
Well, yeah, if he needs more cups.
We'll send
him
home.
He's been slacking and trying to get the Iowa people to listen to the Hanger Dogs, so I'm not so sure he deserves it. Maybe a swift kick in the...
Send him some more zaps. He should be zapping Iowa.
Yeah. Well, Pinky zapped everything in Canada, apparently, to include the Simon Bolivar statue, so... We're in Dutch with you.
Yeah, but they were razoring all of our Hanger Dogs stickers off of the Avant-Garde bar.
You know. So, you know, that's Soviet constructivism for you. Interesting reading. There's a Middle East journalist, Amir Tahiri, who's
not to be confused with
Mabal Zahari. He's been in Iraq here for a bit of time now. The news of Zarqawi. What are you doing? Well, you should let me know. Hang on. Okay, good. All right, now I can get back to my story. The news of Zarqawi's assassination, if you will, or death, or exploding, was greeted by most Iraqis with big cheers and everything like that. But with the Western press, of course, it was, you know, after Zarqawi, no clear path in weary Iraq, the headlines read.
Yeah, so, that was just one of several.
Yeah,
of the
media is just saying, you know, oh, well, that's all great. And, you know, no, it sucks. Really sucks now because of that. So this fellow just wanted to put a different spin on everything that's going on. And he came back and he wrote The Real Iraq. He suggests it's a more promising place than the horror show of the conventional media wisdom. He just got back in the United States after his latest tour of Iraq, and he says he was confronted with an image of Iraq that is unrecognizable, an image that grossly distorts the realities of present-day Iraq, meaning the media image that's put forth here in the United States. Doesn't even equate to what he sees actually there.
This is no revelation to me. You're not surprised. I read the Iraqi blogs.
Well, I'm speaking to the listeners.
Oh.
Certainly not Jimmy. Jimmy understands this too.
Jimmy
as well.
Understands perfectly.
Yeah, he's all over this. But drawn on nearly 40 years of observing Iraq firsthand, this is actually
newcomer.
Yeah, newcomer. Yeah, he points to several leading indicators that he says he has always found reliable, engaging the country's true condition. So in Iraq, first, refugees, or perhaps more correctly, lack of refugees. In the past, one could always tell that life in Iraq was growing desperate by the long lines of Iraqis trying to escape over the Iranian and Turkish borders. Since the toppling of Saddam in 2003, this is one highly damaging image we have not seen on our television sets.
Hey, you know, that's interesting.
Well, instead of fleeing the nightmare that Iraq has supposedly become, Iraqi refugees have been returning, more than 1.2 million of them as of last December. So if it's such a hellhole, why are 1.2 million of them coming home? Second indicator
now,
is...
I suppose it's a good thing we don't have a border with them.
Yeah, well, I don't know if they... Would they go back, though?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Good point. Good point.
I don't know. Maybe they would. Maybe they go back. Maybe we need a border Iraq.
There we go.
Oh, that was a poet thing.
That's why we pay you the big bucks.
Oh,
you know?
Man, that's why I get the free beer.
You're the big thinker.
All right, number two, second indicator is the pilgrim traffic to the Shia shrines in Karbala and Najaf. Those pilgrimages, man, indicator is the pilgrim traffic to the Shia shrines in Karbala and Najaf. Those pilgrimages all but dried up after Saddam bloodily crushed a Shia uprising in 91, and they didn't resume until the arrival of Americans in 2003. In 2005, the holy sites received an estimated 12 million pilgrims, making them the most visited spots in the entire Muslim world, ahead of both Mecca and Medina.
Wow.
Number three, the value of the Iraqi dinar. All but worthless during Saddam's final years, the dinar is today a safe and solid medium of exchange and has been rising in value against other currencies. Related indicators are small business activity, which is booming, and Iraqi agriculture, which has experienced a revival so remarkable that Iraq now exports food to its neighbors for the first time since the 1950s. So finally, Tahiri says, there is a willingness of Iraqis to speak their minds. Iraqis are very verbal, and when they fall silent, life is incontrovertibly becoming hard for them. Such silence was not uncommon under a Saddam, when many Iraqis were afraid to express any political opinion. They aren't silent now. In addition to talk, radio, internet blogs, and lively debates everywhere, a vast network of independent media has emerged in Iraq, including over 100 privately owned newspapers and magazines and more than two dozen radio and television stations. Nowhere in the Arab world is freedom of expression more robust.
It's true about the blogs, because, it's now you can search for Iraqi blogs, and there's a lot of blogs out there.
And they're like in English?
Some are. Not all of them are. But
I don't
read the local language.
Okay.
But I think one of the most the neatest thing you said there was the stable currency. To me is a very...
There are two things that actually you said there that I think are critically... That was one, the stable currency, because that means that they're not printing money to pay the bills. And that's what it's all about if you don't have a stable currency, is they're flooding the market with fiat paper. And the other thing is all of the new little businesses. And I have a feeling that this might be because there's like hardly any government there.
Right. At this point in time.
Yeah, and that's the scary part. If they put together a strong government, a lot of that's still going to dry up, as we well know. No, but seriously, it begins to be the market will decide a lot of things, and that's the coolest thing, and that's where the freedom really is.
Mm-hmm.
No question about it. That's good, news. But of course, the question is, why don't we hear it? I mean, we don't hear about it on Fox or anything, or
nope.
Nothing, zero.
There's Fox obviously is probably the best chance of hearing some of the positive stories, and occasionally they do. They have the Ollie North comes on every once in a while, and he's in country, and he.
Well, I think it's interesting that they have talk radio. I mean, are we over there yet?
No,
I say we.
Well, we have AFRTS over there, if that's what you're talking about.
I meant Hanger Dogs.
No. Oh, Hanger Dogs. Yeah.
I got to look at the web stats and see if there ever was a download.
Now, one thing you didn't mention, and Ms. Jimmy just brought this up, is one of the big things was the oil, and what you did not mention in your it's so rosy over there, which is okay. Is where is the oil? Are they exporting? Are they making money from it? Where is it? Where's our share?
Part of the problem with the oil is a lot of it is locked in because of the damage to the infrastructure, and they keep attacking the infrastructure. So there's a lot of oil that's available, but they keep the guys keep attacking the infrastructure, so it can't flow. So it's kind of a vicious circle. They understand that, and they're trying to do that. But other people are finding other avenues to make ends meet there.
Well, it sounds like they're doing better than make ends meet.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like they're coming along a lot quicker than you would have expected, that I personally would have expected.
Yeah.
That's a big deal when you have a country that, the size of Texas, it's nothing.
Well, if you assume that when Saddam, the oil infrastructure was created under Saddam's rule, they weren't worried too much about guys damaging something.
Right.
Because they knew they would kill everybody that had anywhere close to wherever it happened. So they didn't really worry too much about it. So it's not hardened, if you will, against those kinds of attacks, but nobody is.
And the dogs go wild. Okay, let's go.
I was actually showing Jimmy the now national monument of the original Hanger Dog Studio, which we probably will move back into there in the fall because that one is heated and air-conditioned, where this one already we're all sweating a certain amount. It was almost 90 degrees here today, so it got kind of warm. I wanted to move into another segment here, bring it home a little bit to local politics. We have a thing going on here which is kind of interesting in Colorado Springs. Colorado Springs, some time ago, I'm not sure how many years ago it was, but it was another one of those circumstances where the federal government came in and offered them a out of some of these earmarks that go on the transportation bill. And Colorado Springs, they took the bait. They jumped in and accepted the grant, and they basically created a bus service between Colorado Springs and Denver. And it's cost you about $12 to ride the bus up there.
Where does it go in Denver?
It goes from Fountain to downtown.
Downtown.
So it's about 60 or 70 miles?
Yeah, about 60 miles.
If they got is that a terminus that you can jump off on another shuttle to get yourself to DIA? I mean, that would be the biggest thing I could think of is to yourself a ride
from
DIA.
From downtown, RTD goes all over the place. So you can get to DIA from downtown. But this is one of those express buses, point A to point B.
Does it
kind
go
of thing.
Faster? Than any of the
traffic. It doesn't stop anywhere.
It doesn't stop, so that's a big thing.
So that's the reason you don't take Greyhound.
But it can't go 100 miles an hour?
No, but...
I mean, that would be express.
But remember, this is that one that they were touting a while back that you actually you sit in it, and it's got Wi-Fi in it. You can work with your computer.
Right, sure.
And it's, comfortable seats. This isn't what we call mass transportation for... Bugs or any of the boys under the bridge.
Bug requires no transportation, by the way.
This is
just a bottle of Cisco.
For you listeners, Bug is a friend of Pinky's that lives under the bridge downtown Colorado Springs.
Yeah, hangs out at the 7-Eleven there.
But anyway, I digress. Back to the point of this is it turns out that this grant that the government gave us here in Colorado Springs and we jumped at, it had a sunset provision in it, and a sunset provision basically means the bill goes on for so long and eventually the funding dies.
Right.
So what's happened over the years here is they bought all the buses. They charged them $12 a head to ride up to Denver. The sunset provision, it ends at the end of this year. They now have a constituency out here that wants to ride to Denver every day. We have an obligation to get these people to Denver.
And back.
Why?
And back. Well, because we started this thing.
Well, they need to re-vote it, don't they?
The problem right now is the buses are getting old. They need new buses.
Oh.
And the new buses are going to cost them somewhere in the neighborhood of about $7.5 million. If they don't get other sustainment funds from some other source, the fares just for sustainment are going to go up to $48 a ride.
That's just for the gas and the drivers and the wear and tear on the bus, capital expense.
No new buses. That's just a ride. So the people who were riding the bus with their laptops for $12 are now going to have to pay $48.
So instead of some sort of a free enterprise business that does this, you've got a government-subsidized business.
Well,
right?
I think the point of this article, this was in the local Gazette, I think the one thing we can read into this is other than the capital expense, that we're subsidizing somewhere in the neighborhood of about $36 a ride for these guys to ride to Denver every day.
I was doing that math as well.
So what I would ask is, and these aren't, again, when you look at public transportation, always when they come to us with these, I don't know offhand of any public transportation that the city, state, or federal government is involved in that's not subsidized, that actually makes money.
Yeah. That's probably a fair guess.
The way it's always sold is that, you know, it's for the poor.
They couldn't afford it otherwise.
There'd be no way, and they got to get around. How can they get a job if they can't get to and from the job? We need to subsidize them. We need to have mass transportation. That's the way it always was in Denver. In Denver, RTD, at the time, Governor Romer, when I lived in Denver, he had a challenge out. He says, okay, I want everybody for 1 week to ride RTD. And I tried. I tried 2 days to get to work on RTD.
He fell into his trap.
A 20-minute drive to work turned out to be a 2-hour and 40-minute exercise to try to get to, and that's if you could get on the bus or if the bus wasn't late
and your timing was right. Yeah.
So the RTD is not made for anybody who really has to get somewhere on time and work. They always sell it as it's good for the poor. Well, the kind of people that are riding this bus with their laptops, these aren't poor people. And what it really says to me is the market has established that the price to ride a bus to Denver is $48.
Man, that's expensive.
Well, I mean, if you look at the figure, now, granted, this is a city that's running the bus line, and they're not exactly known for being the best people to run a bus line.
Kind of like the Postal Service, maybe?
They did say it was a back-of-the-envelope calculation, but, of course, we don't know. In other words, it costs $48. We don't know what the market price is.
Yeah.
In other words, it may turn out that they would pay $96, or it may turn out that they will get zero drivers at $48. Mm-hmm. I mean, riders. We don't know because the market was not allowed to operate.
Right. And that's true. I think that's the point. It says that, but now you've created this monster.
I don't think it's a monster.
You're one of the Wi-Fi guys.
It's a monster in the sense that now you've got this constituent which is saying, well, where's our ride? You got to do something about our ride.
The entitlement attitude.
Yeah. And the neat thing about this, and I was talking with Jimmy before the show, is that the city, the local city, is saying, well, what we're hoping for is that we can get some money from the state for sustainment cost. Like, that's a different kind of money. Like, you go get that, and that everybody is happy.
It's different color money, so it doesn't mean as much.
You know, it's somebody else's money, not our local money.
It's all tax dollars, but it's different.
Well, they could do, of course, to really make it right, if they could appeal to maybe Poland or somebody to subsidize it. Yeah. And that way it wouldn't come out of our tax.
Yeah, that would work.
I think it seems reasonable because we pay, as you know, we subsidize other countries. It seems little enough to ask.
Mm-hmm.
That's we could put the word out, as sister cities say.
I think
could you subsidize our bus as a tribute to us as a sister city? Could you subsidize our bus system?
See, that's what I like about you, Jimmy. You're an out of the box thinker. That's just top notch. the Iraqis, the dinars doing well. Why not pitch a few dinars over here to give us a bus ride?
A little thanks our way. It seems little enough to ask. We saved your butt, your country. Hello. Yeah, yeah. How about subsidizing our bus system? Little enough to ask.
Canada, look at the dollar for dollar. It's almost even right now. We're taking all their softwood.
Yep.
They ought to be able to kick in a little bit for some of our friends here and ride their bus between.
I think it's a great idea. It ain't going to fly.
Okay. Just to dovetail on that, in where I'm from, down at Gainesville, we have a bus system also subsidized and so forth. It costs about, I think it's something like $4 a ride, and they only pay $1. But interestingly, the from the student section of town, since it's a student town, you know, Gainesville is.
College town.
College town. They make money, actually, on running what amounts to a 5-minute or 10-minute wait shuttle bus all during the school hours. That part of the thing actually makes money.
Sure.
And yet, of course, where they lose it all is where they have to go on the other side, the poor people.
Yeah.
And literally, I've often wondered why I didn't. I wondered at first why the windows were tinted. I thought it was because of the heat. It is so that you can't see that there's nobody in the bus. And when you feel.
Good point.
I figured this out because the way I figured it out was I was walking down the street one day and I happened to look through. The sun was setting and you could just see through the tint, actually, this moment, that little window there of about 10 seconds where it flashes through. And I saw, like, there were three people in the bus, and they were riding, and the driver, and the diesel. And this brings up one other little quick thing, and we might want to talk about this. What constitutes a gas guzzler? No, I mean, seriously, here's this bus that gets about 1 mile to the gallon of diesel fuel, and is carrying, like, the driver and two other people.
Well, you might be a little surprised at how well the diesel. I mean, my diesel truck, I get 22 miles to the gallon in that big old three-quarter-ton diesel truck. I mean,
really?
Yeah, a gasoline engine, it's probably 13. So the diesel is much more, but the bus, I mean, those big rigs that are driving, they're generally 12, 13 miles a gallon, but they're also carrying a lot. Yeah.
Doing that much stop
diesel,
and start.
Yeah,
they
do
a lot of stop and start, though. He's talking about
the
city buses.
I agree the buses probably burn a bit more, but you'd be surprised how
They're traveling like in first gear most of the time, yeah. And I was being facetious. I heard a figure of 5 miles to the gallon. But again, it doesn't matter. My point is they take up the space of about 9 cars.
Sure.
So I call them gas guzzlers. Anyway, go on. I'm sorry.
I thought the tinted windows were so you couldn't see the passengers being mugged in the town buses.
Could be.
See, there's that cynic coming out.
Yeah.
Of you, I tell you.
No, there's no passengers there to see.
Yeah. None to actually get mugged. She's got wine.
No, she doesn't. She's out.
All right, we got Eric, when you edit this, we're at a TV timeout here.
No, yeah. We're not. Keep going. I gave you the chime. We're at Thirst Aid Station. It's all top notch.
All right.
Yeah, it's part of our shtick.
Yeah. Oh, you know, speaking of shtick, you guys do know that one of the podcasts that I promote on the Jimmy Show is the freedomain.com, the Stefan Molyneux up in Canada?
You know, I listened to him. That guy's a little off the wall.
Well, let me tell you, you have to listen to a lot of it. I've got some ideas from him, but let me tell you, it's interesting. He likes you.
He does?
You are on his website.
Wow.
Not Jimmy, who, by the way, has contributed massive amounts of money on the donate side. Thank you so much.
Well.
And has gotten emails from, but is the Jimmy Doan Show listen? No, it's Hanger Dog.
Wow.
You are one of 4 or 5 shows on, and I don't mean it's down at the bottom of the screen. It's when you look at the website, it's right there in the top right hand corner. Hanger Dogs. This is some of my favorite shows. So
now I'm thinking the real purpose of your visit out here
was
to get on the Hanger Dog Show to promote the Jimmy Doan Show.
And
even though we promote it, you know.
Wait a minute.
All right, we'll go after.
Did you actually think there was another reason? I mean, wait a minute. Did I have you fooled this long?
Well, yeah, I'm easily fooled.
Yeah.
Witness my participation
We're not second stringers without a reason.
This is called an eau deux moment.
Yeah, that's witness my participation in this whole sordid affair. Yeah.
Oh my God.
All right. Well, while I'm talking about,
So what do we wrap up our RTD thing?
Close enough. My point there is like Reagan used to say, the closest thing we'll ever see to immortal life is a government program. It's
right.
Like once you start one, trying to kill them is damn near impossible.
Except you put the sunset clause in there,
well,
and that forces people to do. Otherwise, you're stuck with it.
It's gonna. Yeah. Well, they're gonna be, as you say, probably. The state will have to, or the locals will pick it up somehow.
My bet is that bus is not going away. And by the way, the local term, term for that bus is the magic bus.
The magic bus. But how many people does it service? Well, wait a minute. Let me think of a different way of saying that.
The article didn't say. The article didn't say how many buses they have or what the schedule was, but it's obviously like.
Well, how many people do they move?
Well, it's like a Greyhound type bus. It's one with a nice recliner.
I mean total. How many people?
Doesn't say.
I mean, that would play in.
I did the math real quickly, envelope math, and it's probably a couple of hundred.
Okay.
Could be.
A couple of hundred. So we've got this whole legislation thing going for a couple of hundred people that are getting a cheap subsidized ride to Denver.
Yeah, they certainly wouldn't want a carpool.
No.
No, you know, they all have to go to the same place to pick up the bus in the first place. Well, why don't they just all hop in one guy's
SUV?
There's
no Wi-Fi. Why don't they just carpool, get together? There's no Wi-Fi.
Buy a van. So what? You could put that in your van.
I don't know about that.
What about recliner seats?
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at
What about a toilet for God's sakes?
Look at the Hangar Dogs pimp mobile for crying out loud! It's an electric go kart with ostrich inset leather seats. You could do damn near anything you want.
It doesn't have a bathroom.
No, but it does have it. Well, yeah, it does.
Well, actually, that's
there's
right.
No doors.
That's
so
right.
Therefore, it has a bathroom.
That's true.
But it does have ostrich leather seats.
Yeah. I mean, that's top notch.
That's like, you know.
And a DVD player.
That's a step above a regular golf cart.
A step above.
A step. Yeah, right.
I brought the Stitchmobile. That is a regular golf cart over there. I mean, that no ostrich in there. Unless,
right.
Of course, one got run over
all right,
or something.
We digress. All right, let me get back on.
We love digressing.
Since we're talking about Colorado.
Our best stuff is in the digressive mode.
We were talking about Colorado Springs, but there's another thing going on right now, and we all know our corporate sponsor is kind of into green. She's into electric vehicles. She's into solar water heaters. She's into solar electric panels charging our electric cars. So we're kind of semi-green around here. So is our state senator, Ken Salazar, who is just was recently elected back in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 2004 was when he beat
right.
out
That's
Coors.
Right.
He beat
That's
out
right.
Coors.
Beat Coors.
Yep. He's got a new resolution going on in Congress. It's called 25 by 25, an energy plan. And basically what he wants is 25% of America's energy supply to be from a renewable source by the year 2025.
A noble goal.
And again, now that if Congress really picks this up and runs with it and legislates it, this is something we know can actually happen.
No, so
I mean,
why,
here's another failure of market that we can legislate and make
well,
work.
And here, now, where did 25 come from?
And again,
it's a marketing crap. If you can give me an actual number that makes sense based on a lot of variables, then I'll believe it. But he just, you know,
he pulled this out of you know where.
It's kvitchy. You know, it's 25 by 25. That's just so.
Well,
you know.
an interesting thing to come out of this article that we were talking about that I found neat was, here's a Hangar Dogs question. How much money do you think we've spent in federal research dollars on alternative energies since we started doling out alternative energy dollars? How much money do you think we've spent?
Okay, I'm going to take a guess at this. $10,000.
Yeah, see, and I'm going to guess that Jimmy's wrong. But that's about the most guess you're going to get out of me.
He's off by a factor or two.
Or two orders of magnitude.
Since 1970, we've spent $20 billion in federal research and development on wind power, solar power, biofuels, and other possible sources for renewable energy.
We paid for a lot of master's and doctoral theses is what we paid for.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Now, having spent all that, guess what we came up with as potential sources for that?
Go right ahead.
Anti-gravity.
Yeah, top notch.
Yeah, no,
you know, that'd be cool. Anti-gravity, and all you got to do is put a little fan on there.
Nothing like doing a show with a bunch of smartasses. No,
anti-gravity would be
awesome. Corn, wind, and the sun.
Corn, wind, and sun. Yeah, I could have told you that.
So we spent $20 billion to discover the obvious.
Well, and I would say ocean currents, water currents.
Yeah, that didn't make
the cut. I mean, that's hydroelectric.
Didn't make
the cut. But that's not alternative.
Didn't make the cut.
Oh, that's just silliness.
Didn't make the cut.
But basically the thrust is to grow our way to alternative energy sources. And as you dig through the paperwork a little bit, guess who's promoting the grow your way to alternative energies?
Alger?
ADM.
The farm.
ADM.
Guys, yeah.
That's ADM. Yep. Archer Daniels Midland.
Okay.
The biggest corn producers in
the farm sector, basically.
Yeah. I was going to do work up a little bit of research on something, but fundamentally.
Whoa, research.
Yeah, I know. I did one for the last show. I did a little research there, actually a literature search for some stuff. But, you know, the price of gas in Europe is just phenomenal by our standards.
About $8
right?
a gallon right now.
Right. So why aren't they driving a bunch of hybrid cars? It would be my question. And the reason is, before you guys just jump right all over me.
I wanted to jump on that one.
It's because of what Jimmy says all along. And the market doesn't bear that cost. It's still, you know, until you get the price of gas to the point where it starts to make sense, then people will start. Now, why are people buying hybrid cars right now?
They're subsidized.
Yeah. No, they are subsidized, and there's a lot of folks that just feel good about it.
Well, I tell you, that's it. Again, they don't trust the market. They think they're smarter than the market. It's so funny. They wave their magic wands.
Well, yeah, and the interesting thing there is, like, you look at us. We've got two electric vehicles, and we have a solar array that charges them, so you'd think, man, this is a moneymaker.
Well, no, but yeah, right.
But come on. I mean, all of these things that we're doing, they're novelties, and, yeah, they're kind of fun, but these cars that we drive around here, they're handy because we drive them around at the airport, but they're no more practical than any other vehicle that's offered up as an alternative to me going to town.
You're just not going to beat the gasoline engine.
You can't. There isn't something out there that will do that.
And the interesting thing, ethanol, you know, there's a heat capacity associated with all these things. In ethanol, actually, you know, everybody says, well, let's just do ethanol. That'll be great. Well, you're going to pay more for ethanol, and you got to buy 25% more ethanol to run the same, because your mile per gallon goes down with ethanol,
right,
because it just doesn't have the oomph, if you will, for lack of a better term.
I didn't know that. I mean, we're burning ethyl alcohol and we're losing ground.
There you are with ethyl alcohol. No, if you mix it, if you cut the gasoline with it, it doesn't have that substantial of an impact, and it actually will decrease the price to a certain. But if you go, what is it, E85 they call it? I think that's what it is.
Something.
If you go straight ethanol, you need to buy 25% more. And if the price of ethanol is about the same as gasoline, then why are you going to, you know, unless you have some sort of I feel good about myself, which is what I think most hybrid car people are, or they're very ill-informed. There's the only two reasons I could see. They want to do nice things, and they're willing to pay the extra money for it, or they got suckered into.
Well, rich people can afford that sort of thing, and that's,
sure they can.
And all well and fine. The thing that a lot of people don't realize on transportation, which we're talking about here, is the total cost. I mean, when you have coal, for instance, coal miners die.
Yep.
That has to be in the mix. There are so many things down the chain that have to be in the mix that are not, that somebody, the demagogues simply say, oh, the price of gas, as if that's the only thing that's involved in transportation. It is the tires, all the metal that's involved, the advertising. There's a thousand different things that are involved in transportation. And these hybrid cars, when you realize that a solar cell is, what, up to 5% efficiency now or something?
Yeah,
and they cost, you know, who, that's copper and silicon special clean rooms and all those people. I mean, there's so much that's involved up the food chain or down the food chain or however you want to call that, that it's in the cost of it, that if you just look at the fact that you assume a hybrid car, assume a solar cell, and assume the wind, we're okay.
Right.
But you're not allowed to do that. I'm sorry. In the real world.
Yeah. But in defense of solar panels, I will say that the solar panels, fundamentally, they grow all those crystals, they cut those crystals, and then they grow them all for the space program. Most all of them are grown for the space program.
Okay.
And there's a lot of rejects. A lot.
Right.
And that's basically where the solar cell
industry comes from.
Well, if you're the company that's producing the crystals, you've got to produce those crystals. They're paying you to produce this quality crystal. They're not buying that other stuff. If you have a bad crystal that you build because there's an imperfection,
the bad crystals are in the price of the good ones.
Well, they should be to a certain extent, unless you can sell it, which is why the costs have come down.
Exactly. No, that's right. But my point is, if it was a waste product, if it got broken in the process, and you ended up, out of every 10 crystals, 9 of them were useless on every scale. The price has to be in that 10th one.
Sure, it does.
And that's taxpayer money.
That's right.
For the space program, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So but the fact is, they're able to offset some of it because the rejects actually work for us here on the ground.
Sure. And if you have competing industries, then those guys, if they can turn that around and make money off of turning around, then their price will come down. It costs the taxpayers a little bit less money.
I agree with you. And that's there was something years ago called Ovonics. Have you ever heard of that?
Mm-hmm.
That was a big deal that was supposed to bring the cost down to nothing for that stuff,
No, never.
Okay. Well, yeah, right.
Obviously, if the demand goes up, like the hybrids are still pretty expensive compared to other cars with the demand, which it has. If the demand goes up significantly, large enough numbers, and the cost of the hybrids will come down, then it starts to make more sense. But until that happens, I don't see.
And that's, you have to be careful, though, because if let's say the hybrids were made out of gold, the demand could go through the ceiling. The price ain't coming down.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you got to be careful about what's in it. And if it costs a certain, if it costs, as you know, Pentium chips or something like that, they come down after a while after they have the learning curve. Mm-hmm. But gold has no learning curve. We all know all about it. So you, I think you have to be careful when you talk about the solar cells. It's new technology very often, I think.
It still is. And there's some actually newer technologies from some of the mixtures.
Right.
For solar cells, which are actually pretty good.
I agree.
But the fact that they're 5% efficient, I mean, that's almost, you know, that's a lot. That's a sunk cost as far as I'm concerned. It's just kind of built into there.
Right.
But once you get that and it's coming out, it's you know, then it's the cost of whatever the solar cell is, how much you produce and you offset that. That's where you kind of decide whether or not the solar cells, which it is, you're absolutely right. They're about eight. Depending upon what they are, they're 5 to 9, maybe sometimes 12% efficient. In other words, that just means converting photons into
something. Hell, what's chlorophyll these days? Isn't that about 2% or something for a plant?
Yeah, it's not great. But
even God doesn't do that well. Sorry.
Yeah. All right, well, let me pinch this one off.
There we go.
At any rate, Salazar's staffers.
Oh, I'm sorry.
They didn't have a lot of detail exactly how he was going to get there. They said what they're really looking for right now is just a consensus.
Ken Salazar, the U.S. senator.
Yes.
And he's proposing a bill for whom?
25 by 25.
For the United States.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, not just locally. It's
whole
United States.
No,
his
big
brother.
Guys.
His
the
brother
big
is
the
local.
Big dollar sign.
Yeah, his brother's a local guy. That's why I had to make sure I got the right Salazar.
No, this is Ken.
Yeah.
And so if they're just looking for consensus, we kind of all know where that goes. Once they get everybody on board, then, you know, that's when they start with taxpayer subsidies and the government mandates and the normal route of, well, we're going to legislate us to that goal one way or another.
It'll cost a lot of money.
And I don't know about you, but the government, you know, they don't seem to be doing very good with their vision of tomorrow, much less 20 years from now. So I'm not really sure.
Wait, you preface that with, I don't know about you.
Yeah.
In fact, you do.
Yeah,
I'm
sorry. You're looking at Jimmy.
I'm sorry.
Well, I mean our general their track record is not that great. And
It's not that great. I love it.
I'm more of a, if we're going to try to look 20 years in the future.
I think you're being very generous at not that great.
Well, I mean, I think the point there, though, is that if we're going to look 20 years in the future, if we even said there was going to be a biofuel or some other kind of mixture of fuel, the market is a better one to determine what that should be than some legislature arbitrarily saying it should be 25% biofuels by the year 25. I mean,
no, that is obviously pulled out of his butt. I mean,
it's a marketing thing. 25 by 25.
25
it's
by
all
25.
Marketing.
You know,
it's all marketing.
Hey, 30 by 30, man.
Yeah, 30 by 30.
That's it.
There is no supporting data. It was just, we're working for a consensus.
I say let's go for next year, 7 by 7.
Yeah, 7 by 7. I think that'd be top notch.
Yeah. I'm not waiting around. I'm not going to be here probably that long. I'm going to have 7 by 7. I'm in for it.
Call. Yeah.
Hey, Ken, 7 by 7, buddy.
Top notch. Go for it, Senator Salazar, dude.
Okay, right. Done with that. What's next?
What else you got?
Hey, this is Engineer Eric from the Jimmy Doan Show. And that was part one of the June 19th podcast hosted by the Hangar Dogs in Payton, Colorado, with special guest Jimmy Doan. If you need part two, you can download it from either the Hangar Dogs or JimmyDoan.com websites.